Macmillan Audio presents The Spite House, written by Johnny Compton, read for you by Adam Lazar White. Chapter 1. Eric. The Masson house of Degener, Texas, was like the corpse of an old monster, too strange and feared for most to approach it, much less attempt to bury it. After all, it might be feigning death or dormant. In the primary photograph of the full-page ad, the house's rectangular windows reflected the sun. Behind the house, the treetops looked close enough to brush the walls of the second floor when the wind blew. It was gaunt and gray, old and sickly. 4 stories tall and narrow enough to be mistaken for an optical illusion. Like the photographer was one step to the left or right away from revealing the other half or 2/3 of the house they had skillfully hidden. Another picture showed the house overlooking a shallow valley and 3 buildings that, according to the description beneath the photo, once comprised an orphanage, and before that, a family estate. Eric Ross could not find much more about the house online. A wiki of the most haunted places in Texas stated, "If the Masson house came to life one night and climbed down the hill to destroy that old orphanage, no one in Degener would be quite as shocked as you'd think." Eric wondered whether he should share this part with his older daughter, Des, or just show her the ad, keeping to himself the quick research he was doing in the motel's complimentary office, a small, doorless closet with a sluggish computer. He valued Des's input. Had she objected to them leaving home and pursuing a fugitive path, they might still be in Maryland. But he felt the need to steer her in a certain direction. Not manipulate or misinform her, but guide her, as a father should. In this case, that guidance would come by way of what he withheld. The daily effort of finding a semblance of real work was exhausting him. 8 months of driving from one new place to another, from one new job to another, starting over again and again. It was unsustainable. There were only so many cash payment construction, security, or dubious sales jobs to be found, and they all came with significant risk. More than once he'd been asked to do something of questionable legality. One of his supervisors had told him to dump trash in an unspoiled wooded area where no one needed a sign saying "no dumping allowed" to know that there was probably no dumping allowed. At one security job, he discovered too late that he and his 6 co-workers had been hired to look intimidating while their boss negotiated with a prospective partner, who at one point threatened to call the cops, saying, "I don't feel safe here." In other instances, the person who hired him took advantage of his situation and tried to stiff Eric when it came time to pay up. In both of those cases, Eric had to make a decision: live with wasted efforts and a shorted budget, or do what would have made his grandfather Frederick smile and say, "That's my boy's boy." Twice, he chose to ignore the examples his father had set for him, to be the figurative bigger man and walk away, and instead mimicked what he'd once seen his grandfather do when he was a boy: take advantage of being the literal bigger man. Each time, he squared up and stepped closer to the men trying to cheat him, saying, "It'll cost you a lot more not to pay me." It always felt like the right thing to do, and filled him with a fire that burned out too fast. It also felt like a trick he couldn't keep getting away with. He was a few inches shorter than his grandfather.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?